Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Wandering Road Podcast. I'm your host Chris, alongside my co-host Dean, who is back from his vacation. And today, we're going to be talking about the interesting individual of Pazuzu Algarod. But before we get started with today's show, if you would like to share your stories with us or would like to be on the show, please reach us at our email address of twroadpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear your stories. We would love to have you as a guest on the show to share your paranormal experiences. And if you submit your stories and you don't want to be on the show, we could always dedicate an episode to your stories. Again, that email address is twroadpodcast@gmail.com. And with that, we'll get started with today's show. How are you doing today, buddy? It's glad to have you back. It's been a while.
Konnichiwa. Arigato gozaimasu.
I'm a pretender.
Waka waka waka.
I'm a pretend to know what you just said. I'm assuming you said hello.
I did. And that's the full extent of my Japanese that I picked up while I was over there. So Ohio is good morning. Konnichiwa is hello. And arigato gozaimasu is a formal way of saying thank you. So I said those things a lot while I was over there, and it was an amazing trip. I got my my Kinopio, which I guess is the Japanese name for the toadstool from – we call it toadstool. They call it Kinopio, but it's that little mushroom guy from Super Mario.
That's awesome. How was your trip in general, man?
It was a dream. It was an absolute, it was just like, okay, if no one has been in Japan, you're listening and you want to go, you got to go. It's like, now's the time. The exchange rate is super low. Everything was relatively cheap. All the food was just like it was unbelievable. Like the sushi and the Wagyu beef, all within a decent price range, and some of the best sushi and beef I've ever had in my entire life. And the hospitality is bonkers. Like, there is absolutely no comparison to Western hospitality, especially with like airlines, like hotel stays and restaurants. Everybody was unbelievably kind. And even like, I would say like a good 45 to 50% of people that we ran into spoke decent enough English to where we didn't really have to worry about using our pocket translator or anything like that. So it was relatively smooth. And we definitely want to go back as soon as possible.
I'm glad to hear that. I was stuck here in the States.
Shitty Western PA.
Right. But for today's show, man, we're talking about the interesting case of this individual called Pazuzu Algarod, whose real name was John Alexander Lawson. So what do you know about this guy, Pazuzu?
I kind of did a little bit of a deep dive into this guy, and this is an interesting one of, you know, like not necessarily a serial killer. I mean, there's speculation that he killed more than two people, but he did, in fact, he was confirmed to kill two people. I think people tend to gravitate towards this story more because of the stark and crazy look that he had going on. Like, he had tattoos all over his body. He lived with his mom in this house that was basically past being condemned because it was so not dilapidated, but it was just like so full of garbage. Things didn't work. It was really run down. You can actually see the police did a walkthrough of his home back in like 2012 or whatever. It was just a hot mess. It was very terrible. So I think the circumstances of the story is probably interesting to a lot of people because the fact that he supposedly worshiped Satan, and then it was kind of turned into a Hollywood movie, The Devil You Know, which I will admit I haven't had a chance to watch yet. But I think that generally speaking, this is just a really creepy, crazy story about someone who kind of spiraled out of control into demon worship, Satan worship, and then eventually drugs and murder.
Yeah. What's interesting about him is that they say he exhibited early signs of mental illness, specifically with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder from a very early age. And they kind of attribute these issues to his erratic and unstable behavior, did you find anything out about potential mental health issues about when he was growing up or what his upbringing was like?
So I actually didn't know about the mental health issues from a young age. I did read about him being diagnosed at a later age after the trouble started, where he started committing crimes and started popping on the radar of law enforcement. But apparently he had agoraphobia, which, if you're not familiar, that's a fear of, like, I think it's essentially, in a nutshell, a fear of leaving your home, or a fear of, like, going out into public, into places where you can experience severe stress and anxiety. So that is to me probably one of the more interesting psychological aspects of this story, is you have a guy who, on the outside looking in, seems type A, seems very confident, so confident that he can break and enter into homes and try to get away with murder and all that stuff. But at the same time, he's clearly had instances where he's had panic attacks, panic disorder, can't be around people early on in his life. So to me, that kind of screams like he took on this role to fill that, or kind of nurse that ailment of being afraid of people and places and things. So kind of like a shield or an armor that he put on, so to speak. But when I looked into his childhood, it's actually really sad, because if you look at these old photos of him, you know, he played baseball. He seemed like his mom really loved him. They took, you know, nice photos together. And it wasn't until his late adolescence, like teenage years, maybe even that late, where he started to exhibit, you know, signs of wanting to hang out with wrong crowd kids, like doing, you know, things that kids shouldn't do. But I mean, hey, like, who didn't do that for a little bit of time in their youth? Like, you know, I hung out with the goth kids for like a month, and like, it didn't click with me, but like, I still tried it. So like, I think it's his trajectory from childhood into adolescence and his teenage years seemed pretty normal. And it's just, I do have to wonder where everything really went wrong, whether it was his mom divorcing his dad and moving in with a stepdad or something like that, but that doesn't seem like there'd be anything there triggering some massive change. So I think that probably alludes to the idea that he did in fact have some harbored mental illnesses at a younger age that maybe weren't picked up on by his parents or his teachers. And I'll just say real quick, while before we switch it over, there is one more note that is not confirmed, but it's also floating around as a speculation that he did harm animals at a younger age. It's so strange with this whole story about there seems to be a very significant lack of detail in a lot of aspects about this. So I can't say, like, he doesn't even say like where that information came from, if he openly admitted it or if it was just speculation. But there are some stories about people saying he purportedly killed certain animals and ate their hearts and stuff like that. But I don't know. Have you heard anything or come across any information that adds on to what I said so far about his childhood?
No, I came across the same thing in my research, that it seemed to go downhill after his parents separated in 1990. He started consuming alcohol and using different types of drugs at the age of 13. And also, that's where the claims of, I guess his mom made the claim, was that he was harming small animals, which to me, well, not to me, I think that's like a universal sign that, you know, someone is not right in the head and they eventually start killing human beings. It normally starts from very like crazy behavior as a kid to then actually killing animals, small animals, and then they upgrade to humans, which he eventually did later on in his life. See, this is one of the cases where, like, if you just look at his picture, it's like, oh shit, this dude is fucking crazy. But if you look into his background, it goes from, like, you know, a kid, seems to be a normal kid, like you said, doing baseball and whatnot. And then it just flips as soon as his parents get separated and his moving into his developmental years. So I wonder how much of an effect that had on him, which led him down this path of destruction. Who was to say that if his parents did not separate, he would have turned to what he turned to?
I would be most interested in finding out, because there's no talk about his religion, his religious upbringing. It doesn't seem like his parents were religious at all, but it's possible that they could have been. So he might have had some kind of exposure to Christianity or whatever, but the idea of Pazuzu, I want to talk about that momentarily, because Pazuzu being a labeled as a, you know, a de facto king of demons in present day mythology or religion or culture or whatever. However, the history of Pazuzu is very strange and interesting because I looked into it and I think I've done some research on it before, but Pazuzu is actually a deity from the ancient Mesopotamian culture and their religion that they had all those thousands of years ago. But Pazuzu back then, according to history and archaeology, wasn't evil per se. There was like a dualist, like a dual representation in Mesopotamian culture where Pazuzu actually was treated as a protector deity, even as much for children and pregnant women. But at the same time, there was this weird evolution that happened towards the end of the Mesopotamian culture when it started to be assimilated into other regional cultures. And Pazuzu kind of made this shift into more of a nefarious deity. And now, today, people just call Pazuzu a straight out demon. So that's something that is interesting to me because this guy, Lawson guy, which by the way, think about that. Like his name was Lawson. He literally changed his name to Pazuzu Algarand and Algarad. And Algarad, I believe, shoot, I had the note somewhere. I think Algarad is like a component of a Islamic name that means like the hoarder of locusts or the controller of locusts or something like that.
Like yeah, I think like swarm. The king of locusts or something.
The
like
king
that.
Of locusts.
Yeah,
okay.
King of locusts or something like that. I wanted to touch up on, I didn't mean to cut you off,
no,
but
good,
you
man.
Mentioned something really interesting about Pazuzu in general. The shift from being this kind of like protective role, and you could blame that on the Exorcist movie.
Yeah.
Pazuzu is the demon depicted as possessing Reagan in the films.
Mm-hmm.
Which
not President Reagan.
not President Reagan.
That was a different demon. Well, he said he was a well demon. Well.
But yeah, that's kind of like the reason why, especially now, people hear the name Pazuzu and they're like, "Oh shit, that's a demon." Well, it's mainly because of the influence on popular culture. But I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
It's funny. I wanted to talk about, this is a perfect moment to bring this up. We don't have to dwell on it, but like, imagine you're like a deity and you've been around for, you know, whatever, maybe you were created 10,000 years ago or something. And like, you're going around, you're like helping protect pregnant women and children. And you're doing all these good deeds and you're getting like worshipped and like, oh, this feels good. And then time goes on. And like, people are like, start to treat you like a little bit like, oh, I don't know. I heard that Pazuzu is a little bit, I think he does some bad things. And then the guys, the Pazuzu is like, the fuck, man. I tried so hard. And nowadays, imagine being a deity and you're just completely like blacklisted as this evil entity. And then you just go, oh, fine. You want a fucking evil entity? I'll give you an evil entity. And then that's how like deities transition from being relatively good into evil. So maybe he can switch back if we just, give him some more props for the things he did back in the Mesopotamian culture. And we could totally avoid all this possession bullshit. Exorcist.
I know. He heard Pazuzu heard he was going to be used in a movie and he went to go watch the movie and then got really pissed off afterward.
Right.
It's like, screw you guys. I'm going to actually go start possessing people.
And one more thing on that, this is actually to pull it back into this Lawson guy. Isn't that kind of interesting that he adopted a name of a deity he probably didn't think this deep about it, but he adopted the name of a deity that is deeply misunderstood. And I assume that, and you know, maybe he wasn't secret genius. Maybe he did do that on purpose, but isn't it creepy that he took on the name of a deity that was once seen as good, but is now seen as evil, but is also equally just as misunderstood across the ages. I don't know where he got the name, the idea from Algarad, but I think that's like, I've seen some pictures of him dressed in Islamic garb, or I apologize. I don't know what the name is, but like he had the traditional headscarf on and the attire. So that would be also interesting to find out what his fascination was with Middle Eastern Islamic culture or religion.
Yeah, that is a good point. And I did see those pictures as well, but it's interesting. It's because he's dubbed as a Satanist. I don't really know if like he actually was one, but he was kind of influenced by Satanism, it seems.
Yeah.
Given his house was fucking filled with satanic symbols, that's probably a dead giveaway.
So I guess it's probably a good point to transition into the actual events, because that's what we're here to talk about most deeply. So we kind of touched on his childhood and his transition into this more nefarious kind of evil character who apparently started cutting his teeth, no pun intended, because he actually did cut his teeth, you know, getting into brazen acts of breaking and entering and assault and stuff like that before he took on a darker role of actually murdering people. But I want to say that for a second. That's something that jumped out to me in this story is anytime I hear when someone does some crazy body modification, if they do it professionally, that's one thing. And like, okay, that's, you know, it's probably no cakewalk to do that. I don't have any tattoos. But people who I've talked to who do have a lot of tattoos, like some people say it doesn't get any easier getting a tattoo and it's painful, but that's a professional. This guy apparently gave himself a lot of body modifications by himself on his own, including on his face and neck. But the craziest, not craziest, you know, in terms of psychological, but the most intense that I've heard with this guy is that he actually filed down his own teeth to be sharp, like a demon's or a like a dragon's tooth or something like that. And I just have to wonder, I have to do some research on that sometime, because like, I can't imagine the dental issues that would bring on. Like you would probably need to be absolutely perfect in your technique of filing to make sure you didn't get down to the root. But I assume that even if you did it perfectly, it would still deteriorate over time and your body would, or your mouth would slowly break away and chip away at the teeth from chewing and eating and stuff to the point where you'd have some really serious mouth issues. So like, how do you deal with that? How do you deal with that pain on a constant basis? I assume part of the answer is, you know, heavily medicating yourself with drugs and alcohol, which apparently this guy did. Have you ever heard of anyone doing like crazy body modifications like that?
Have you seen the Kardashians?
Did they file their teeth? Okay. Oh, yeah. The boobies.
Yeah.
See, that's professional though. That's like, I've seen like videos or people who get their teeth surgically altered to look like vampire teeth, but those are like caps, or like, they don't actually file their teeth down. That would be like the Kardashians, like injecting themselves with something in their ass, or like trying to like do the thing on their own. And we all know that that's not the case.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, there were always those odd kids in high school that would, oh, like some would maybe tattoo themselves or brand themselves for some particular fucking reason. I think that's the closest I've seen, because I went to high school in New York City and you come across very interesting people. Let me put it this way. My graduating class was like 1,200 people. And you times that by how many grade levels four, that's how many kids were in that school. So almost 5,000 kids. Yeah, there are bound to be some people that do some weird fucking shit. So,
did you ever see the kids who like clip their, I've seen kids who clip their fingernails into like sharp points, and there's actually like some kids who got in trouble for that.
Yes.
In middle school.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yeah. They would like clip their and file their nails down, so they're like super pointy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They do something stupid and like bend their nail back and then like rip it.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah. There's always those people. Always those people.
Do you have any tattoos?
Do I have tattoos? No.
Yeah.
No, I do not.
One. No. I thought about getting them a couple times, and just the older I get, the less I want to deal with it. You know?
Yeah.
I don't really feel that strongly about anything that I can't just like have in a photograph or like a note or in my memory.
But right.
I don't want to like piss off anyone who's really into tattoos. I did that one time, by the way, by accident. My friend that I used to hang out with, He was getting a tattoo.
Used to.
Yeah. So I basically inadvertently, unintentionally called out some tattoo artist when I was in their shop. And I think it got like, you know, one of them asked me like, oh, are you going to get a tattoo today? And I'm like, no, I don't really have any tattoos. It's not really for me. And then I said something like, I don't really understand, you know, I understand some people like it, but for me, it's like, kind of like, I don't want to put anything on my body. And they like kind of got defensive. They're like, well, what are you saying? Are you saying that people with tattoos? And I did like, well, I was like, at the moment, I'm like, what the fuck, man? I didn't say like, I'm like, whoa, some people are really feel strongly about getting tatted up. So I didn't know that was a thing until back then.
Yeah, I thought about doing it, but it's just too expensive. I'm not.
Yeah, it's expensive.
I'm not dropping fucking $600 for a half sleeve.
Yeah. Right. That's something is going to like melt off your body when you're older. And in addition to the body modifications, and I think probably in my mind, one of the most intense parts of the story is the actual state of his and his mom's home. So apparently he lived with his mom. I watched a couple interviews where she talked about her son's life after the fact, you know, after he killed people. And she seemed like a relatively normal person. And if you watch the kind of like mini episodes of the police officers going through their house, it was just like absolutely, you hear them say a couple of times like, oh yeah, this place is beyond condemnation. You know, it's once again, no pun intended, but like the house was so messed up with garbage and like there was no drainage in the sinks and it just smelled horrendous. There was just drawings and all kinds of crazy writings and postings all over the walls. However, they showed going into his mother's room, which was they quoted, you know, not the cleanest, but still leaps and bounds cleaner than the rest of the house. So I have to, can you just imagine that for a second? You're a parent, you still love and care about your child, but you know your child is beyond a point of bringing them back to a normal level, like societal level. So you kind of just sit back and deal with the dilapidation and the messiness and the drug use and the beer can, the alcohol, like every, like I can't imagine like having to be like being a normal parent, like staying normal and living in that location with your child who is like falling apart.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane to me that she like lived there in her own room like it was normal.
Right.
Like I don't understand how one can be like that and not even say anything to him. Well, I assume there's probably a fear factor involved because he potentially killed people and sacrificed animals and ate their still beating heart after like they've been sacrificed. They claim that he's bragged about killing prostitutes at least.
Oh.
Yeah, at least two prostitutes or something of that sort. But I looked up pictures of the house and it's just absolutely disgusting. It's just filled with filth. And what's even crazier is that he had 8 dogs that lived with him. Yeah, that were rescued from the property. Unfortunately, 7 of the 8 had to be euthanized because of their severe health issues. But it just still baffles me how people can live in this manner. And not only that, like he was, him being an outcast in society, he was able to attract like-minded people to him. And that just made things worse.
Yeah.
And he attracted people that felt socially excluded, that society wasn't fair to them, that they didn't belong in society. And you take people like that, all in a like mind, and you put them together, and they just live in this one massive echo chamber. And they all probably do drugs. They all probably do all of this crazy behavior. So they would encourage one another to engage in all of this debauchery.
Yeah. I'm sorry, this is random, but I'm looking at the pictures of his house as well on Google. And there are some interesting drawings. First thing I noticed is he's got some Arabic. So there's a lot of Arabic on the walls. I don't know what it says because I don't speak or read Arabic, but that to me says that he at least knew a little bit to read and write. And I have to wonder what it says, but I saw on one of the brick walls, I think it looks like it's in the garage. He has what appears to be an address, spray painted on the wall. And I did a Google search of it and it appears to be a random house in Washington State. It's not his home. apparently. But can you imagine, like, I don't know the story behind that picture or that address, but like, imagine like, you know, you're just the unlucky person who, you know, this crazy person's etched this address on the wall and you forever are tied to that because of that. It's like, it's just like, oh, that would suck, man.
That'd be really crappy. Like, so they just see that picture of the address and it's like, well, that's my address. And I never met this guy before. So what the hell?
Dude. Okay. People. Oh, I got goosebumps right now. I got goosebumps. Okay. Hear me out. I'm not fucking around right now. I was reluctant to share the address and I'm still reluctant to share the address. I don't know if we should or not. Okay. Here's what we'll do. So I don't want to share the address and say it because I don't want to be responsible for, you know, directly taking people to this person's address in Washington state. But if you do a search for Pazuzu house or Pazuzu, whatever compilation of house, you'll find a picture where there's red writing on a brick wall. And it looks like it's, I'm pretty sure it's in the garage because I see a garage door. If you type in that address, it'll take you to a street map, a street view. And in the picture, which apparently was captured in 2012, because it says image capture April 2012 for Google, that's the first red flag, the first creepy thing. I don't know why it's taken so long for Google to update that street view, but that is a long ass time for them to not update a street view. I've never seen that. And I see a lot of street views for things that I do for work and stuff. So if you look at this house and you zoom in on the right second floor window, there's a pair of what look like glowing eyes staring out of the window of this home.
Get the fuck out. Send me the link.
I'm not messing.
Right now. Send me the link now.
I got goosebumps, man. It's really creepy.
Yeah, we're going to leave this in. I'm going to confirm this all of y'all listening today. All right. So he just sent me the link. Google Maps. All right. Okay. Oh, what the fuck?
Right?
Oh, dude, that's creepy. Yeah, you're right. The street views from Emmett, April 2012. Let me move up the street and see. Why is everything... Okay, if you move up the street a couple of times, it shifts to 2019. But if you go back to that location...
Oh my God.
That is bonkers. That is crazy.
Okay, so... Hear me out, people. Hear me out. It is extremely strange that there is only about a 75, maybe 80 yard stretch where Google has taken a photo of the street view from 2012. And if you go up the block, it switches to September 2019. Let's reel it back, people. Let's reel it back. I don't want to get people too excited because if you go further up the street again, away from the house in the next intersection, it's also April 2012. So, okay.
It's fucking odd. It's odd. Yeah. 11 years is a very long time for Google Street View to not update.
Yeah. And I'm going around here and it looks like there are lots of points in this neighborhood where it jumps between 2019 and 2012. So, okay. So not as creepy anymore, but still the fact that they look like to be glowing eyes in this house window that was mysteriously written on the wall of this dude's house, the Satan worshiper's house.
Look like to be glowing eyes.
Well, I wish I could find, like another vantage point that
now I got to take another look at it.
I'm looking behind the house or not behind the house, but like on the opposite side to see if there's anything that would be reflective that would shine into that. There's a pool. There's a community pool immediately on the other side of the house. I see a slide that has metal, like a water slide that has two metal, railings on it. Maybe there's some reflection off of those. I don't know, man.
We're going to go with, there's glowing eyes. Okay. I mean, it's so creepy looking.
Yeah, it is. It is.
It is really creepy looking because it doesn't look like it's like a light because the light fixtures would be up higher.
Right. Right.
It does. I don't know. Maybe we caught. We got a glimpse of Pazuzu.
Well, that poor house, those poor people with the 3-car garage. By the way, I've never seen a house that small with 3 garages. I don't know if that's like a duplex. It looks like a single family home, but killing me, man. You're killing me.
Dude, that's insane though. That was a good pickup. That was a good find, because I never noticed that. I never thought to look up whatever he might have written on those walls or those doors.
Yeah.
In that house. So it's insane. And speaking of the house, the environment of the house, the house was located in North Carolina. So for those of you that have never been to North Carolina, it can get very, very hot and very, very humid. And what they found in that house, they found it cluttered with animal carcasses. So it must have stank to the high heavens in there. They found pentagrams and other occult symbols. They also found, when they went into the house, like ritualistic elements, that like graffiti and items that were associated with satanic rituals, which we kind of already know because he boasted about beating hearts from sacrificed animals. But it did seem that his interest and deep dive into Satanism and the occult did have an influence on his behavior. And I think that might have, what's the word I'm looking for? Influenced his willingness to commit these heinous acts.
So I have to wonder as well, with the carcasses that were found there, there is some speculation that there, like you said, there were some ritualistic killings with animals that could have been going on. I guess, you know, initially when I read about that, I was skeptical. I thought that maybe that would just be some like hearsay or just speculation about what he was actually doing. But I didn't know that there were actually animal carcasses found in the house, which kind of gives more likelihood to the idea that he did do these ritualistic killings with animals. And I also have to wonder as well, they found 8 dogs there. It's, you know, the state of these dogs was poor apparently because a bunch of them had to be put down. But it's interesting to me that he could keep dogs alive and so close to him is apparently really important to him. At the same time, killing other animals for ritualistic purposes. Isn't that kind of an interesting dualistic perspective there? It's like he loved a certain kind of animal and could be like caring of them, not using them in any terrible manner, but also not care about other animals to the point where he just like kill them and eat them.
Yeah, I found that interesting as well, that he was able to keep dogs and take care of them and whatnot, because there's a picture online of him holding a little puppy.
I saw that. Yeah.
You want to talk about his girlfriend and shit?
And the last thing I want to talk about with regards to his home is it was eventually condemned. There are pictures of it being torn down, which is very interesting to me. I don't know the address off the top of my head. I have to wonder if anything was like rebuilt there, if they could even get anyone to buy that property after it was torn down. I'm sure they would find somebody who was, you know, interested in that sort of thing. I also wonder, I mean, his mom was pretty old at the time of the interview, and I have to wonder if she is still alive and where she went off to. I think she must have been still alive after they condemned the house, at least. So I do wonder where she went off to after that. It didn't sound like she had any other family members or spouses or anything like that. But yeah, that, I guess that's the sad end to the physical home. So maybe now we could talk about the actual lead up to the killings. And the first thing that struck me, we talked a little bit about this, and it kind of feeds off of the last podcast you did. I wasn't there for, but his girlfriend, her name was... It's escaping me off the top of my head right now. I have it somewhere. 1 second, people.
Amber Birch.
There you go. Okay. Amber Birch. There is strangely not a lot of information on her as well, other than the fact that she was apparently an accomplice to the murder of the 2 men in that house. And the murder victims were Joshua Wetzler and Tommy Welsh. I don't know the backstory between her and Pazuzu guy and these two murder victims. But I do know that there were some drugs involved in his life. So I do wonder if they were also drug users. And Amber was most likely a drug user as well. But from what I heard about in the interviews that I watched, he apparently felt like he was able to kill people and get away with it. And he actually said that in front of some people at different times. But the fact that the actual killings took place, it seemed like not long after he had been with Amber, kind of is an interesting point to the story, because it, like I said, it ties into what you and your friend talked about in the last podcast with this idea that in certain religious cultures, in certain religious narratives, unfairly, I might add, because it's emphasized unfairly, not that we believe this, but like women tend to be labeled as like the harbingers of evil, or like the bringers of evil, or the downfall of humankind or whatever, because you have the story of like Adam and Eve. I think there are even some other stories that were brought up that, you know, where women being brought into the fold, bring upon people like certain negative events and stuff. So I can imagine some people trying to tie that into this story with Amber Birch coming into the picture and actually having this guy follow through with the killings. But at the same time, like, you know, you never really know what motivation the guy had, because it could be as well that, you know, maybe the fact that he finally found someone who was sexually interested in him at this point in his life, who he actually kind of cared about, made him even more brazen and confident. Not that she was the bringer of this negativity per se, but like kind of like pushed him over the edge, so to speak, gave him that last bit of confidence he needed to follow through with the killing. So, I mean, what's your perspective on Amber and her, how she plays a role in this apparent dual murder?
I think she was influential in encouraging his bad behavior, because she did have a criminal past, just like Pazuzu Algarad did. It wouldn't be out of scope to say that she might have egged on Pazuzu to commit those murders, even though he himself has claimed that he has committed murders in the past, but there was no way to actually prove it. I think she might have had a hand in encouraging him even more and enabling his behavior even more. I mean, like we said before, like he was surrounded by like-minded people, and what are they going to do? They're going to keep encouraging each other to do all this stupid shit. So yeah, he met this girl that was infatuated with him. They're infatuated with one another, and proclaims her to be his wife. So I think that she'll have a major hand in the stupid shit that he does.
Well, I guess whatever influence he had ultimately culminated with him pulling the trigger. No, once again, no pun intended, because he actually did. I think the murder was committed with firearms, but he ended up killing these two guys, Joshua and Tommy. And interestingly enough, I believe he murdered them in the actual house. I guess it is strange to me anytime I hear a story about gunshots going off in a residential neighborhood and no one thinking to call the police, but then again, I guess in, you know, middle of the road America, people are probably popping off, off and on, you know, other people get used to that sort of noise, that sort of sound, or maybe they think it's a firework. But apparently he took these guys and just buried them in a shallow grave in the backyard. And if you look at the actual home when it was still standing, it seems like it didn't have a lot of top cover or privacy from other people, especially other homes around the area, maybe even like facing the backyard. So it's so crazy to me that, like, to think that he got away with burying these bodies in his backyard and no one happened to see or smell them. Have you come across any details about how, you know, he was pegged for the murder? I assume it's because these two men went missing and eventually someone reported them as missing, and then the trail led back to him. But it would be interesting to find out if somebody saw something about him, you know, burying these bodies in the backyard, or maybe there was hearsay or speculation or something like that. But have you come across any like motivations or the actual processes of him going through and burying burying these bodies?
Well, the suspicion started, and this was prior to any bodies being found on the property or any remains being found on the property. In October of 2010, Pazuzu Algarod was charged with accessory after the fact of involuntary manslaughter. Because apparently, in September of 2010, the body of Joseph Emmerich Chandler was discovered in Yadkin County, and Algarod was accused of concealing information from the investigators and allowing a murder suspect to stay at his house. Right there, if this guy is, harboring a murder suspect and he's a known Satanist, and he's sacrificing animals and he's claimed to have killed people, but they didn't have any proof. I think it's one of those situations where it's, they got their eye on you.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
What's interesting to me is that when we were doing our research on this individual and the murders and the case, it seems to jump from these guys were murdered, and then in 2014, remains were found. And I try to do some digging of who found the remains or whatever, and it seems to lead down a bunch of dead ends. Was that the case for you as well, or did you find anything?
Well, I found one news article that goes into a little bit more detail, but it's not much. And what I didn't know until this point that's I think is interesting is there was some speculation by the local sheriff's department that Algarod did in fact engage in this, what sounds like, according to psychiatrist's notes, a monthly practice since the age of 17, based off of a self-proclaimed Sumerian religious beliefs, that he needed to perform a ritual during what he called the Black Moon. And that included the sacrifice of small animals. So I guess that is, a little bit more detailed speculation on what was going on and his motivations behind the killings. But what's interesting, connected to the deaths, is that the sheriff's office had known that these guys were missing. And there were some anonymous tips, apparently, as far back as 2010, which is like pretty much, I think that's almost 5 years. 2010. And I didn't know this until this point. These guys were missing for that long. They apparently persuaded the judge to authorize a search of that house. And the contents that the police officers found there were apparently sealed. I don't know if they were ever opened, but it was very strange that they didn't think to check every aspect of the backyard, because apparently those two men were buried in a shallow grave. I assume that the smell in the house probably masked the smell of the dead bodies in the backyard.
I was thinking that. I really was thinking that, but go on.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, what's even more fascinating to me is that, so we all know, like, one of the reasons why the practice of burying a dead body came about historically from human history is because you needed to remove the dead body from being picked over by scavengers, right? I mean, some cultures in the past intentionally left the body out in an elevated space for scavengers to pick away at the body, because I think it was like kind of like getting, assimilating back into nature or whatever. But for the most part, burial became a very important process to separate the dead body from not only the population of the rest of the living people, but also to protect the body from being directly scavenged by animals. So it's fascinating to me that these two guys were buried in a shallow grave. I don't know in what, maybe plastic bags, which wouldn't hold up, even if it was in a box, even if it was in a tight sealed box, which would have had to have taken a lot of effort to construct and actually bury deep enough, animals would still find their way into these boxes. So it's crazy that a femur or like some body part didn't like get dug up by some animal and dragged away to be found by somebody else. Like, I don't know how he kept animals away long enough from these shallow graves for that to happen in the course of 5 years.
He was probably sacrificing them.
Right. Yeah. Oh, hey, there you go. That's a double kill right there. Like, you just, any animals to get in, you just trap them and okay. Yeah, I do. That's actually interesting, right? Like, I wonder where he got, if he really did kill animals every month over the course of, okay, let's do the math real quick. 36 years old minus a year for when he was probably incarcerated. That's 35 when he was probably caught-ish. And then subtract 17 from the time that he probably started. That's 18 years times, there's 12 months in a year. That's 216 animals that he would have to sacrifice in that length of time. I guess, you know, it'd be funny at like one point, like he got lazy about it. He's like, first he's like killing like deer and large animals and like getting really into it. And then over time, he's just like, oh God, I'll just get a lizard or something. And just like goes to the pet store, just like gets a little tiny, like goldfish. I'm like, eh, okay, it counts. I'm sorry. That's probably too dark of a joke for this, but pick up on this idea that once he committed the murders, he managed to keep it quiet and the police officers didn't find the bodies in his backyard for 5 years. However, like we said, they were found at one point or another. He was arrested and convicted and all this information on him came out, probably presumably from his therapists and stuff like that and his psychological issues over the years that were tracked by medical professionals. So he goes to in front of a courtroom. He gets pegged with the crimes, the murders, and he is sent to jail. Now, I don't know if there's any more detail beyond what he faced in the justice system. Have you come across anything noteworthy about his actual prosecution or arrest? Anything he said or did? I can't find anything.
Obviously, he was arrested, but he was still awaiting trial.
Oh, okay. So he was still awaiting trial when he was... Okay.
When he killed himself, yeah.
Okay. Which, you know, crazy twist in the story. I don't know if we mentioned yet, but he did end up supposedly taking his own life. What was it, like 2 or 3 days before Halloween? And supposedly it was on the night of a full moon, which yep. adds a little bit extra creepy factor to this story. You know, apparently he committed all these ritualistic animal sacrifices on the nights of what he called black moons. I don't know if that's the same as a full moon or what, but that is very, very intriguing. And more intriguing than that, there's not a lot of information about his actual suicide because the police tended to deflect any questions about how he died in prison.
The only thing that I could find was that they found him unresponsive with a wound on one of his arms. That's okay. The only thing that I could find. And yeah. He did this a few days before his trial. Before his trial was to start, and that Birch, his quote-unquote wife, actually stood trial and was sentenced.
Okay. And I'm assuming she's still in jail.
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. So usually with police reports, there's usually some kind of like documentation or publicly visible, like say like a mapping or something of where the injuries were found. So I just want to see if I could find a map, like an anatomy of where his injuries were. Thought I saw one at some point, but I can't find it anymore. I guess we'll just stick to, here we go. Let me see. Ah, interesting. So this is an article by the Daily Mail, which I don't know if that's very reputable or not, but this looks like a drawing breakdown of all the tattoos and injuries that he had on his body at the time of death. Let me see here. So he had a swastika on his right thigh. He had some wounds and markings on his legs. And I see the cut that he made. It looks like he made a vertical cut along the line of his right arm artery. Or right arm vein or whatever. And presumably that's what caused him to bleed out. One strange factor with that wound is apparently police officers couldn't find the weapon that he used in his cell to create that wound. That's interesting, isn't it? Okay, like what could you use to slice open your vein in such a way that would presumably, I wonder if he could have swallowed it or it could have been broken down in some other way or just thrown out of a window or whatever. What do you think about that?
Maybe if they can't find a weapon or item he could have used to injure himself, maybe it's one of those cases where the guards let someone in.
Oh. Yeah.
Because I was watching this TikTok of this guy that was a former prisoner. Like he did like hard time and he tells prison stories. And he said there are cases that if an inmate is like fucking insane, not like mentally insane, but like has done some heinous stuff,
mm-hmm.
like the guards will be complicit in turning a blind eye
right
to certain things that happen. Like if like a child rapist, like goes into prison, they immediately know that that person is a target and they're going to get fucked up. Right. And I'm just speculating. So Pazuzu Al-Gharrad was claimed to be some part of like believe in the occult and Satanism. And what do we find a lot with prison and religion? It seems to have a big impact. You know, like some people come out more religious, whether they convert to Christianity, whether they convert to Islam, they seem to find faith. And Satanism is in direct opposition of that. And if you rub people the wrong way, like I've never been to prison, so I'm just assuming based off of what was said in like YouTube videos and like prison documentaries, I think it's safe to assume that given his track record and how he was as a person, he might have rubbed some people the wrong way and they might have done something about it.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, and made it look like he did it to himself.
When I hear a story like that, I think it absolutely does happen. But when it comes to a story like this, where you have kind of like medium-sized town, I immediately think when I hear a story like this, I think like cover up in from the perspective of the department protecting itself from doing something really stupid in terms of like, you know, like they're responsible for watching him. And like, if he did have a weapon in his cell, it would be like, you know, how did he get that weapon? How did he hide that weapon? Shouldn't the correctional facility have caught that? So I think it's possible that, you know, what you said, it could have happened, but it's probably more likely that if there was a murder weapon or a weapon that he used to kill himself, it disappeared because the people responsible didn't want to have the finger pointed at them that this guy somehow got a hold or created some weapon in prison that they let happen. The third possibility that I think is the most likely is that, remember, he sharpened his teeth. It wouldn't be easy, but it's very possible that he could have used, you know, his own sharp tooth to cut his own vein. You know, if that cleaned off in a certain way or the skin was swallowed or whatever, there'd be no way to tell that he used that actual tooth to do that. However, I'm not sure I would completely subscribe to that idea, because apparently he had tried to kill himself or bite his arm before. I do wonder, that's an interesting thing to think about. Like, what happens when you have someone like that who has a body modification that's permanent, like sharp teeth? And they're suicidal. Like, what do you do? Like, do you put caps on the teeth? Do you take the teeth out? I mean, that's not humane, right? You would have to, I assume that they must have fixed his teeth to protect against that, but I don't know how that works. I mean, what do you think about like that could either go against someone's right as a person or like freedom or whatever. I could see that being an issue, but I could also see, you know, the justification for having to fix his teeth so they're no longer a weapon in jail, especially.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. They could classify it. Okay, these are sharp teeth. It could be used as a weapon. Mm-hmm. You can bite someone's neck and pierce their jugular, or you can use it on yourself. So yeah, I completely get that. I can see how that could be within the realm of possibility.
But at the end of the day, I think that the creepiest thing about this whole story and his end, his untimely end, was that it happened on the night of a full moon, and the police officers or the correction officers or whoever had no further comment or details about his actual murder. Supposed suicide. I don't want to be the douchebag whose speculation runs wild and like, but you know, if there is any credence to this whole idea that we've talked about for so many episodes about, you know, whether or not this spiritual side of reality is tappable by humans and demons are summonable or whatever, like, you know, it is creepy that he ended up dying on the night that he committed so many past ritualistic killings and he himself became the actual final killing. That could have just been his own design. But the fact that the police didn't go into detail about that, it's just like, why wouldn't you do that? Like, why wouldn't you tie that back in? Because that would kind of like absolve you a little bit of doing a, you know, having a massive fuck up on the correction side. It's like, oh, this guy was gonna do it. But then again, I guess you could also argue that like, if they knew that much about him, they would have watched him extra carefully that night. I guess we can close it out on that idea. Like, what's your final perspective? What's your final point of view on this guy's apparent suicide in jail?
I think because they said they didn't find any weapons, right? They just found him wounded. It's either he wounded himself, he like bit into himself and just let himself bleed out, or someone killed him. That's the only thing I can think of. Because if you, I mean, where this took place, a certain part of the country, they're more religious than others, and I don't think they would take nicely to Satanists. So maybe there was some foul play, but I think I'll just stick to he probably did something to himself. He might have made like a shank or something and flushed it down the toilet after he hurt himself.
Hey, that's a good point. Yeah. Although I assume places like prisons might have some system to pick up on that, but maybe not like a smaller jail, because he, like you said, he was still awaiting trial. So that means that he was probably kept in a smaller,
like holding facility.
Yeah. Holding facility with not a lot of high tech countermeasures and stuff like that to prevent such things.
What are your thoughts on it?
I think it's, I have to be the boring guy again. And I have to say that it's probably just this dude actually managed to off himself in some way that embarrassed the lead correction officers. And they just did the whole thing about, like, you know, plead the fifth, no comment. We don't want to lose any of our budget or get anybody fired. So we're just going to say that we're still looking into it, et cetera, et cetera. And nobody was really demanding further questions because everyone probably just wanted to get rid of this, put this story behind them anyway, because it's such a stain on the town. That's just an unfortunate, sad end to the progression of someone's life that could have been way better.
Thanks for tuning into today's episode of The Wandering Road. You can find us on Apple, Google, Spotify, and most podcast platforms. Be sure to subscribe and share. Also, don't forget to give a follow on Instagram at TW Road Podcast and follow my TikTok at TWR Podcast. Take care, and I'll catch you on the next one.